This is a podcast from Shooting People.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the ICA. My name is Erin Qureshi, and I'm Director of Creative Networks here, which runs the club, amongst other things. We're really pleased to have this panel here with us tonight, and of course, working with Shooting People for the second time in 6 months, which favoritism, clearly. So without further ado, I introduce you to James Mulligan.
Thank you very much, Erin. Thank you very much for having us. Thank you all very much for coming. I'm James Mulligan. I'm the creative director of Shooting People. Any members in? Come on, put your hands, make some noise or something.
Blimey.
Very good. Kept away from Bath too long. For those of you who don't know anything about us, we are a global independent network of filmmakers. We have 33,000 members here and in the US. And we exist online and through daily bulletins to help filmmakers find each other and get their short films and other films, as you might have guessed from the title of the event, funded, made and seen. We are being recorded. Jess has just arrived. And we need Jess up here, actually, don't we? We'll find your chair, Jess. We'll introduce Jess last. For you in the audience and you on the panel, mind your P's and Q's. We're being recorded and we will make a podcast out of tonight's event to be hosted both on the ICA site and also on the Shooting People site. Visually also, please keep your fingers away from your nostrils. My assistant Tamsin is running around capturing the event for photographic posterity. Let me talk you through our illustrious panel. To my immediate right, and then along, not in order of the biographies that you have, your first brain puzzle for tonight. But to my right is David Skillinger, who is currently the manager of VC2, or Viewer Created Content Outreach Department at Current TV. Trish Tuttle is immediately to his right, and she edited the book Get Your Short Film Funded, Made and Seen. Trish, hold it up, let everybody see that. One of the purposes of tonight's event is the public launch of that book, and indeed our panel is that book made flesh for your pleasure. To her right, again, is Claire Spence-Cook, senior producer of BBC Film Network. To her right, the dinosaur on the panel is Ben Blair, an actual filmmaker. Okay, that's good news. Ben works for Shooting People as well, runs an independent filmmaker's blog, and will be showing some of his films a little bit later on. And last, and in an almost upstagingly fashion, not least, is Jess Search, my colleague, who's a co-founder of Shooting People. May I be so self-indulgent as to ask you to welcome us to the room by putting one hand against each other and making applause-type noises. Now, from one way or another, you've been attracted to this event tonight through listings on either Shooting People or through news bulletins on the ICA's website, and you were promised an opportunity not only to sit, take notes and learn, but to perhaps even pitch or talk to people who could help you with your filmmaking career. So can I now introduce to you the not panellists, okay? And I have here, could you stand up please, Philip Ilson. any short film program that's worth curating, and might have heard of the Halloween Short Film Festival, which plays here regularly and is returning Prince-like with a new name in the winter as the London Short Film Festival. Joe Bateman, right here in the nice Argyle cashmere there, runs the Soho Rushes Film Festival. And then in the back row is Jeremy Boxer, who also is have bag, will curate, has run ResFest in the UK and internationally for years. The idea of having them there rather than up here, apart from limitations of space, is that when we finish this semi-formal part of the evening, these dear people, as well as all of us on the panel, are available for your questions offline, one-on-one. What we're going to do, probably in the room where the booze is. And what we're going to do now is I'm going to give each of the panelists a bit of an opportunity to discuss what they do and why, and give you some audio-visual or web-based examples. We'll rip through that, give them a couple of minutes each, and then try and get a bit of a discussion going amongst us, at which point I'd like to encourage you all to raise your hands and ask whatever question of whomever you see fit. And so, given that this is the occasion of the public launch of the Shooting People Shorts Directory, I'm going to ask you, Trish, first. How did the project come about?
Okay.
And how did you decide who it was that you interviewed or commissioned articles for the book?
Well, the project was really, like most of the things that Shooting People does, was a very collective idea. I think Jess and Kath came up, knew that they wanted something on short films, but it sort of grew organically with a really loose set of parameters. I mean, we knew we didn't want to do something prescriptive that was a sort of how to make a film manual, because there's enough of that out there. We knew we wanted the emphasis to be on exhibition, because there really is no sort of collected short film exhibition book out there for based on UK filmmakers' experience. We didn't want it to be sort of how you sell your film in America. We wanted it principally to have the emphasis be on how you sell your film if you're a UK filmmaker, or how you get your film seen. We knew that because the short film exhibition isn't really commercially driven, and production isn't commercially driven, that really more than possibly in the feature film arena, we wanted to make sure that it represented as many different ways of making a film as possible. Because with short film, we really felt like you can express yourself in so many different ways, and we didn't want the book to sort of push one form over the other. I think that's pretty much it. But in terms of deciding who was going to be interviewed for the book, because it was sort of exhibition-driven or emphasized exhibition, we sort of started with a lot of those interviews, and we really wanted to make sure we represented as many of the major buyers for short film as possible. Buyers not necessarily meaning money changes hands, but exhibitors and buyers for short films. So we wanted to make sure we got lots of the new emerging companies, but also the sort of cornerstones of short film exhibition circuit in terms of festivals and websites and sort of emerging new media buyers. And we wanted to get filmmakers in there, but again, because it wasn't production-driven, the Blaines ended up doing this amazing interview. Initially, it was going to start as a little short interview, but it expanded because if you've read Ben's blog, he is, I'm going to flatter you here, but it's truth, incredibly eloquent, and the interview was so good. It really worked nicely as a sort of backbone of the book. If you've seen the book, I hope you agree, but it really does, it acts as a jumping-off point for lots of the other interviews. And the Blaines seem like a great choice for us, not only because they have a relationship, long-standing relationship with Shooting People, but also they've made, am I right, 11 short films, more than 11 short films, and including music video. They've worked across various forms, narrative, non-narrative, shorter, longer pieces. They've made independently financed pieces, also worked with regional screen agencies, and worked with the UK Film Council recently on Cinema Extreme. So they just seem like a really brilliant pair of filmmakers to get sort of covered. You've covered so many bases that it made a lot of sense to do that. And those are really the sort of key interviews we got, were sort of exhibition and then bits from filmmakers and the sort of spinal piece from the Blaine brothers. And then beyond that, we commissioned sort of four or five articles from people who work in each sector. Marilyn Milgram, who did a piece on Working on Your Idea. Jess did a piece on Documentary Idea. We had a piece on finance from the co-producers of Hibernation. And Maeve O'Donovan did a piece on exhibition, and Kath did a piece on production, which sort of act as jumping-off points for us. But that's basically it.
Great. Trish, you made the point just then that a hole in the market that you identified was that there wasn't really a manual for exhibition. And just on a general point related to that, when you were sitting down cooking up the idea for the book, was it your feeling perhaps that the industry and climate around short filmmaking had changed in the few years leading up to that, you know, to that meeting, and that perhaps that was why a book like this was timely?
Sure. I mean, I think everyone's aware of that, the kind of rise of the short, which has largely been driven by distribution, you know, more places to see them, more demand for them to be made. Also, I think a sense of kind of them being more honourable as well. I think people have taken more pride in the form, and a lot of other people have helped with that. I mean, Future Shorts, lots of other people have kind of piled in and made shorts feel like they're something, you know, really special of themselves, not just calling cards. They're very important as calling cards, but they're not just calling cards, and you can aim to make something that's kind of perfect in a win within and of itself.
Great, thanks. Ben, we're going to you now. Perhaps we can even segue off one of those one of the comments that Jess made just then, that the idea that a short film should not be just a calling card. You got thoughts on that, and then tell us a bit about that, and then play one of your own.
Yeah, I mean, I think sort of one of the reasons why I think what me and Chris said in the interview we did for the book was useful, was because not only, you know, have we spent far too long making our own films, but also, sort of thanks to Kath and Jess, we did the mobile cinema thing a few years ago, where we took a bunch of films sort of in a van around the country, and to kind of make that happen, I sort of did the first bit of programming and watched a lot of short films, which was actually a really, really great thing to be allowed to do as a filmmaker. And having gone through that process that I think anyone who is thinking about making a film should go through, of watching every short film you can lay your hands on, it became very clear to me that people who make short films just as a kind of like a calling card to get ahead in the industry should probably be dragged through the streets until they die. the whole mobile cinema thing and watching all those short films did kind of set a bit of a sort of fire glowing between me and Chris, because it just sort of made us see quite how mistreated the form had become, and how so many people were just making short films in their own little bubble, and they were kind of, you know, showing them to their mates and probably their mums, and in some cases their girlfriends. But that was pretty much it. And as a result, I'd kind of say, send me your films, and I'd just get 10 of exactly the same film, sometimes with the same title, sometimes with the same actors. And you think, come on, surely at some point, you know, having a cup of tea, you should have tapped them on the shoulder and said, it's funny, I kind of made this film last month. But, you know, they weren't being paid, so they didn't care. So that was kind of why we were so keen to get involved, to kind of help sort of, you know, spread that point that Jess is making, that short films aren't just a way of getting ahead. In fact, it's a way of getting ahead. There's better ways of getting ahead. What they are, though, if you use them right, is a really good way of getting yourself ready, and of finding out what it is that you enjoy about making films, and what it is that you actually have to say about making films, and what it is, you know, that draws you to it. And a lot of the time, people make terrible, terrible films, which they then expect the rest of the world to be interested in, as opposed to making terrible, terrible short films that they then learn from, which is really kind of the really important bit. Because obviously, you know, your first films are most likely to be rubbish. Mine were. I'm proud of that. Some people, you know, they did make superb first short films. I hate them. But, yeah, it's a process that as a creative person you should go through, and with an eye to the audience, but also with an eye to realism and knowing kind of what it is that you've got to do, and being aware that, you know, if you make a terrible film, well, that's fine, but learn from it and make a better one next time. And the only way you'll make a better one next time, you can see why this interview filled up the whole book. I'm going to shall I show the
film?
Yeah, the film. The other thing that Shisha came to us for was to get a kind of a case study. And the two producers that we work with on the film I'm about to show you have very kindly kind of opened all of their files and probably published some things that probably shouldn't have been published, but that's fine. The film I'm about to show you is kind of the production of it is sort of featured throughout the book, so I'll show it to you so that it makes some sense when you read the book. If I can make this work. I might need a hand.
If you press play, for instance.
Oh, no, not that one.
Is it playing? Doesn't it
look like it's playing?
Shall I press this button?
Yeah, try pressing that button.
Oh, but it's the same play now.
Yeah. It takes a second before it changes.
Fine. Keep going.
Who's with me?
Say 2005? It did, didn't it? Yeah, I think it said, yeah, 2005, which is a little frightening. But actually, I mean, to pick up on what Jess said about short films being a thing in their own entity and sometimes being their own little perfect thing, I mean, I wouldn't for a minute call that film perfect, except the fact that that is exactly the film that I wanted it to be in my head. And we wrote the script back in 1999. Oh, it's emotional. I wrote the script back in 1999, and we kind of held on to it, and it kind of got optioned by a couple of people that thankfully didn't make it, and lots of people kind of read the script and were really keen to do something with it. But me and Chris kind of knew that we really liked that one, and we wanted to really make that one in this way. And it's kind of, it's not, you know, it's not really a calling card. It's not, it's particularly not a kind of, you know, a short that you can turn into a feature. There's nowhere else for it to go. It is just that one little thing. But I'm still really, really proud of it, and it's one of the few things that we've done that I kind of, you know, can actually keep watching without going, oh, if only that hadn't happened, if only we hadn't cast that man, he's rubbish, and stuff like that, you know, so, yeah.
And the next two people we're going to have talk to before we throw it open for any questions are both in the joint positions of being effectively exhibitors, although through different channels, and commissioners. Claire, you have you wear those joint hats elegantly and well. Tell us a bit about what the BBC Film Network does and the music shorts scheme.
Okay.
And so a little closer to the microphone, please.
Sure. So basically, I don't know how many of you have heard of Film Network, hopefully most of you, but we're the BBC's platform for British filmmaking. It's been going for about 3 years, and the focus is really British film in all its forms, but really more on a grassroots level in terms of exhibition. There's two bits to the site, so you can watch, rate, comment on films and submit them to us, and we showcase three or four new ones every week. And there's a separate section which is more of an informational side of things, which is the magazine, and we do things like festival coverage or behind the scenes stuff with directors. We cover shoots, things that are in production, short film schemes, things like the BAFTAs. So it's a real range. We've also got the filmmaking guide, which we're launching actually again at the end of this week. So if you check the site at the end of the week, we've got this whole new, refreshed part of the site, which is more about how to and who to contact in terms of the industry within the UK. So have a look at that. We accept submissions, so people can send us their work, submit them through the site. And we also receive highlights selections from UK festivals like Joe's Rushes or Philip's Halloween London Film Festival, Short Film Festival. We also did a big promotion recently with Edinburgh Film Festival, and we're their exclusive online British film thing. But that meant that we got great access to the premieres and interviewed people like Jim Broadbent and Paddy Considine on projects that may otherwise have slipped through the net in terms of general national press. The commissioning side of things has been going about a year. We've got two schemes on at the moment. One is the new music shorts, which I think is Anastasia here, which Anastasia did one of them, and we've just literally finished them, and they're premiering at the Electric Proms on the 24th of October. So if you're around for that, there's going to be a public free screening on the 24th, and that's at the Roundhouse in Camden. That scheme is a collaboration with lots and lots of different people. It's internally, it's between three bits of the BBC, because it's very difficult to get the BBC to give us money to do anything. It's us, New Talent, and then the Electric Proms. The Electric Proms are the theatrical exhibitor, if you like. We, Film Network, put together the scheme and manage the scheme, and Talent give us the money and then go away. So that's quite nice. And each year we commission five films, which are commissions based on music that we've put on the site, which you can listen to and then send in a treatment for. It's quite a low-budget scheme, and we don't ask for people to have already made something before, but you have to demonstrate a level of creativity and will in terms of making the thing. And we're going to do a bit of a festival tour with them as well, so we're going to take them to Encounters in Bristol. Hopefully Clermont-Ferrand in France might show some of them, and we'll take it from there afterwards. The other scheme that we're doing is slightly different. We've just partnered with BBC Films, and it's very early days at the moment, but we're doing a comedy short film scheme, which is more, I guess, a little bit like a Cinema Extreme or something, where it's more of a step towards making a feature. So it's a way for BBC Films to, very low risk, take a punt on a few new comedy directors and see where it goes. But that's very early stages, and we haven't actually really made anything yet, so you have to watch this space for the next year or so. So that's that. I'm going to hang around after, so if anyone wants to ask me anything specific, then you can. But shall I just show one of the clips? Yeah,
yes, please.
This is it might take a while to load, so I'll tell you about it. So this is from previous year's new music short scheme. As I said, we commissioned five films, some animation, some live action. The scheme's quite open. We're really open to anything. It doesn't have to be a certain genre or a certain style. It could be documentary. It could be anything you want, really. It just needs to go with the track in some way. Let's see if it actually happens. I'm going to show you... What shall I show you? I'm going to show you Gemma Burdett's film, which is lovely. It's quite subtle. But it's the interesting thing for me with this film is it looks live action, but it's all taken in digital photos. So it's actually animation. So it's a nice little marriage of all the different techniques. Is that happening? M-Craft Dragonfly, Gemma Burdett. There we go. Oh, and then you have to go to play now.
Thank you.
give us a time and detail perhaps about the commissioning process behind the new music shorts.
Yeah, sure. So, as I said, it's a collaboration within the BBC with three different departments. And so there's one of us from each bit. Then we approach record labels who give us a selection of tracks which we pick from. And this year we worked with Warp Records, 679, Big Dada, who are on Ninja, and Domino. And they gave us tracks which they thought were vaguely filmy, and we made a choice within those tracks of which ones we thought would be good. We put them up on the site, and we had about 2 months of a call for submissions so people could send us their ideas based on the tracks that they'd heard on the site. It was quite a quick turnaround. We launched the scheme in April. We closed the competition in terms of entries in June, and the selection was done in about 3 weeks, who was actually going to get commissioned to make the films. We also had one day which was a workshop day, if you like, which we ran with Warp Films, who were the producers for the scheme that we brought in on board. And that, at the end of that, everyone pitched their idea to the team and the record label, and we decided from that who got the funding. So
was a verbal pitch and a written element as well? Did people storyboard it up?
Or it was really up to... it was really up to whoever it was, to be honest. I think things like storyboarding and having a really clear idea of what your beginning, middle and end of your film is really important. Because this is a music-driven scheme, having relevance to the track or the musician was important. Obviously, for the label to buy into something, they want to see that it's not going to be about how rubbish their act is. but we could have had... this year, actually, we didn't at all, but generally we try and go for acts who wouldn't mind being in a film as well. So if you did want someone like... We did a Wiley one, and if you did want Wiley in the video being Wiley, as long as you can turn it into a film, then that would be okay. But the projects that we've had have very much been narrative-driven short films of their own, in their own little way. $5,000 generally per film.
And who owns the rights at the end?
The filmmaker and the production company retain the rights. We just take a license on actually showing it. So it's not great budgets, but having Warp there doing all the deals in terms of post-production, I think helps quite a lot.
Yeah. Big load off not having to clear a track.
Yeah, no track clearance problems. We clear all the tracks in perpetuity, so if filmmakers want to show it at a festival, or as long as it's, you know, they're not making copious amounts of money out of it, then they can use it as they want to, which obviously can be an issue with music licensing normally. And it's a really interesting scheme. I mean, some labels are more up for it than others, but having done it, I've now got people like Universal going, "Can we do it next time?" I'm like, yeah, because they've got loads of money and hopefully they'd help us make something a bit bigger. And they've got amazing names of, you know, their back catalogue would just be incredible to repackage in a new way. So we'll see, but it's hopefully going to be an annual scheme, and I'm badgering various departments to do other ones, because, you know, it's not an area that I think the BBC until recently have really thought about in a sort of educated or structured way.
Oh, so they don't plan on telling, do they?
No, I mean, that's something we're really fighting for. At the moment, we show online, obviously. We did have a download service. We're going to launch a mobile service in the next month or so. That's obviously very short stuff, under 1 minute, generally. We have petitioned BBC 2, 3 and 4 to show them, and they've all gone, yes, that's very nice, but not yet. They do actually show on BBC Three if it's part of a wider competition. So there's the New Filmmakers Award, which is at Encounters in Bristol. I don't know if you know that one, but it's probably the biggest short film festival in the UK. And those winners are going to be shown on BBC Three. So there are certain angles in terms of getting it on the BBC, but it's not brilliant, to be honest. So it's just a question of banging away, and hopefully someone eventually goes, all right then.
So I think there's quite a lot of discussion that can come from that exact point about the life of short films once they're made and the new lives of short films which are arriving by the busload at the moment. But let's get our last ex-cathedra talking head out of the way. This is David from Currents TV, who's going to tell us about what he does. Again, an exhibitor and a commissioner, but of documentaries this time.
Yes. Hi, everyone.
Into the microphone, please.
Into the mic. Hi, everyone. How many of you have heard of Current? I just have to ask. How many of you have heard of Current TV before tonight? Thank you. I always have to ask because, as these people know, it's not the first time that I do this, and it just makes me feel good to know that some people have heard of us before. Otherwise, I'd obviously be doing a very bad job. Current TV is a TV network. I guess the main difference between me and all of you guys is that I work for a TV channel. And if you look at my experience there, I do come from quite a solid TV background rather than a film background, so to speak. The closest to a film I've ever made was a music video that I did when I had my own TV production company. And I guess obviously that's, that experience reflects in what Current TV is. We're a TV network and an online platform launched by Al Gore. I guess I should add by the Oscar-winning, Emmy-winning, Nobel Prize-winning ex-vice president of the United States, and great guy, Al Gore, and his business partner, Joel Hyatt. The idea for the network came from, quite a sound realization that there was a need, especially in the United States at first, but then obviously globally, of opening up the media, and especially television still being the most used medium in the world, and therefore the one that can so to speak influence most people's decisions on a daily basis, and therefore in the United States, because of how a few very big conglomerates own most of the media outlets out there, Al Gore and Joel Hyatt decided to buy an independent TV network, which at the time was called News World International, and rebrand it and rebuild it completely from scratch into Current TV. I always like to tell this short history of the channel because it sheds a lot of light on what it is that we look for as a network. The main idea of the network is that we are a network made for, by, and with the viewers, i.e. everything on the channel is short form. And by that, we mean 1 to 10 minutes. So in that sense, we fit into the short filmic category. But it's all non-fiction that we take. So it is, in some ways, a news and information network. But the way that we like to tell news is by opening up the medium so that anyone can contribute to the network. And we appeal to more or less experienced filmmakers globally. The department that I work within is called Viewer Created Content, and pretty much we're the department that provide most of the content on the network, both the US network, the UK and Ireland network at the moment, and we are branching into other territories. But otherwise, if you are from Italy, like I am, that's the funny accent, or if you are from Australia, wherever else, you can watch all of the short form pieces on the net that are on Current TV online. So in a way that, broadening participation, anyone can become part of Current TV. We do commission a lot of work, but we do like to thrive on uploads that you've mentioned also from anyone and anyone out there in the world. Again, we've had some great pieces coming from, say, Pakistan as well as South Africa that obviously we would have not been able to have unless these people were here in the UK. Subject matter-wise, we deal with anything and everything that's of interest, we say, to young adults. So that can be, from hardcore hitting news in politics and current affairs and finance to trends in fashion and art, music, profile of people or places. It literally can be anything and everything as long as it's absolutely fascinating. Another of the keywords that we have on our list of things to tick when we get pitches in. I just wanted to show you today specifically, we launched a new website, which I'm sure that, for example, it must be the first time that you see it.
Right? No, I saw it at 6:30 this morning.
You
have. I saw it.
You're such a dork then. Yeah,
we
launched
the Janet Jackson thing.
Do you want to watch that?
I
haven't watched it. The idea, again, we had a website, of course, before that was mainly the Make TV section that I'll show you in a second. But the constant effort with us is to broaden participation, i.e. to involve more and more and more people into the game and to make sure that you don't necessarily need to be an experienced filmmaker, or you don't necessarily feel like you need to be an experienced filmmaker in order to either pitch an idea to us or upload a video that you've made before. We have what we call VC Square training. We have an online training facility. We have editors in the office and as well as producers that work with you along the process of getting your short film made. In case, obviously, that's a commission that we have. We have a great business affairs team that gives you all of the support as far as the music is concerned. So again, all clearance, etc. You're not left alone in that. We have a very strong music library. We've actually just also struck a deal with one of the major music labels in the world. I think they own 60% of all of the music worldwide. They will be available online. I can't say until I guess it's made public.
60%.
60%. And we have... I'm glad it makes you laugh. So the idea, what I really try and emphasize all the time is, you know, not to be scared if you have an idea that you think is fascinating, to come up to us and pitch it to us, or if you already have something that you've made in the past, again, feel free to upload it on the website. I'll tell you very briefly, because I know that those are always questions that come up, and then I'll just show you the Make TV section, and then we can move on, if that's okay with the timing. As far as it works on uploads, is that you can upload something onto our website. We don't have any rights to air that until we have negotiated an agreement with you, where most terms will be negotiated. And when I say most, it's the price side of things that I always get a lot of questions on. We can pay anything, really, but usually we tend to pay, depending on the piece, on the length of the piece, on how many pieces we've already commissioned to you or bought from you. It can be anything from, say, £400 to £2,500. It usually tends to sit between, the £500 to £1,000. And that can be literally for a two-minute piece on, I don't know, someone that you have special access to. I had someone at Rain Dance pitch me something about their autistic brother. And again, it was such a great idea that this guy had, and obviously he had very special access, and it's obviously an issue that affects a lot of people, so we'd be interested in that. So instead of going out and looking for autistic people somewhere, etc., we go out to you guys and say, if you feel that you have special access to something, and that can be even just that you're going to Burma next month, and you know how hard it is to get there right now. So come to us, and there's a great chance that if you have access to the country, to people, to ask their stories from their perspectives, from their angles, we might commission you a story to do there for us. I lost the point of what I was trying to say. Oh, no, okay, about uploads. So when you upload something, we get in touch with you if we like it and say, yes, we want to buy that. And then you can come in and we can talk about the piece and we can discuss a fee. And I told you how much the fee would be. A lot of the times what happens is that you maybe have a 15-minute piece or a 30-minute documentary, even a feature-length documentary that you want to show us. Because of our time restrictions on the channel, i.e. between that 1 to, say, 10 minutes, we might ask you, if you like the piece, to do a cut-down version of it. And what we end up owning is that very cut-down version. So whatever we agree to buy from you, that we end up owning. I know it's not the ideal scenario in most cases, but really, as a channel, we are a TV network as well as an online platform. We don't have, celebrities or long-running series. We have very little advertising. Really, our goal is the pieces that we commission or that we buy, or some of which we produce ourselves. So that's really where the strength of the channel comes in. When in the case of a commission instead, again, you can come in and pitch however many ideas you want, and then again we'll negotiate a price with you. We end up owning the very final cut that you give to us, but as far as the rushes of the piece, you keep those. So if you want to recap, you know, the piece, you sell us a 5-minute piece and you want to, you know, put together a half an hour documentary with that, you're very much free to do so. The last thing that I just, you know, for us it's quite an exciting day because of this. We had people in the office at 5:30 this morning looking at this. I wasn't one of them. But so the difference in the website is that whereas before we only pretty much have the on TV and make TV buttons that you see up there, this one and this one. So one button that would tell you, I'm not going to click on it because it's very slow, the connection is. And so you would be able to go online and see what was being played on TV at the moment. Why are you laughing, Iram? I'm sorry. It's all due to him. It's all due to the time restrictions that he's imposed on us. And then the Make TV, I'll show you in a second. But the exciting part is that now you'll be able to log on, and pretty much it is becoming slightly a bit of Wikipedia, a bit of MySpace, a bit of Facebook, a bit of a portal. And the idea is that on a daily basis, and we change the homepage according to how many views each item that you can post has, you pretty much can get an idea of what most people are searching for in the world right now, and what the articles that most people are interested in are, etc., etc. So you can literally create a profile like this Andrew Fitzgerald did, and post things. They can be things about you, things that you're doing. You can promote your film on there. You could have promoted this talk tonight, say any of you, or any of you coming here could have made a posting about this. You could talk about the book that's coming out, just anything and everything that you want to. And it will come on the homepage, and then it will stay on here for as long as people are looking at it and responding, as you see, 5 responses, 4 responses, etc.
Story about the Nobel Prize there, I see.
The last Nobel. Well, it's not. I don't think it really has to do with Al Gore here.
I said corrected.
But then you see there's 314 pages already, with 3,131 stories being posted. So you are always able to then go back and do a search for the item that you've posted, and you'll have a link there so you can tell people to go and watch it, etc. And you can post links, you can post films, you can post anything that you want. So again, that's part of the self-promotional aspect of Current, where again, by uploading a film on Current, given that we buy, it will be shown on the website. You can tell people to go and see. There's a viewing, a green lighting system as well, whereby people can green light your film, and if you get enough green lights, we have to buy that film. We launched it today, so it's slightly early. Yeah, we just did today.
But previous to today?
Previous to today, I have it at the office. I don't have the unique visitors, the reviews, but I don't really deal with the website per se as far as numbers and figures. It's all done out of the US, so that's where the main department is. So it's not something that I've looked into before.
So your figures would be global as opposed to UK specific?
We'd have UK specific, we'd have US specific, because the website at the moment is, the one that I've pulled is UK and Ireland specific, and there's a US specific. So if you're anywhere within the UK and Ireland, I think anywhere within Europe, you're automatically redirected when you type in current.com to the UK and Irish site. If you're anywhere else in the world, you're redirected to the US site. Mm. But then the hope is that as we expand into new territories, we'll be able to have localized websites in their own language, etc. Mm. The last thing that I just wanted to show you was that I talked about the upload. If you want to pitch something, just you can talk to me or get in touch with anyone, any of us at Current. And if you want to upload something, you just go to the Make TV section of the website, and that's where you upload your video. And you simply are talked through how to do it. You can most of the time just drag your file onto VideoEgg, and automatically we get a bell ringing in our office that a new video has been uploaded, so we can talk to you about it. First of course, you have to log in and register.
And otherwise, fire poll.
Correct. And then we all get together and look at the videos and get back to you. So that's pretty much it.
Editorially, is there anything you can't show?
Editorially, it's there's not anything. No, it's like the usual Ofcom rules that we all have to kind of stick to, and obviously, what we always like to say is that we do want angles and perspectives on all subjects from anyone and everyone out there. What we do look out for, though, is a very well researched piece. We don't just put anything up. Whatever is your argument, as long as you manage to hold it up in a nice and fair way, then that's what we look for. And we do, but we do look for, say, you know, during the Lebanon and Israeli conflict slash war slash whatever, I never know really how to call it. It's that we had a piece from the Israeli side, and we did look quite heavily for a piece on the other side to make sure that, you know, both sides of the story were fairly represented, or at least, you know, fairly from the perspective of the person that made those pieces. Everyone, whenever you upload and whenever you end up on the channel, your profile is constantly shown. And when we have a host in studio introducing your pieces, they always say who you are and where you come from, what you do. Your picture keeps coming up throughout your piece. And at the end, you get your credits as well. So the idea is very much that we're a platform, and we don't make anything ours per se. It's not really views necessarily.
Have a drink of water, mate. There's a shorter version of that speech in the book. Has anyone got a question?
From who?
Jason.
No, from Jason.
Jason Meehan.
Can I have a question for the audience?
Yes.
How many people here are interested in the documentary?
Blimey.
I wear another hat as well. I work with the Channel 4 British Documentary Film Foundation, and we fund shorts. So you guys might want to come and speak to me after this movie. I won't talk about it now because it's not of interest to the people who aren't.
There's a piece in the book as well too from Katie.
Yeah.
So if people want the website and want more information about what you do as well.
So please shoot your hands up in there and ask us questions. It's a lifetime opportunity to pose questions to this panel. Sir?
I've got a question from the gentleman. Your commissions, do you actually sort of write a budget for documenting any idea that you like?
Sorry, can you say that again?
I was just asking about the commissions. Do you actually provide a budget for the documenting ideas that you like?
Absolutely. What happens with the commissions is that you can come in and we can discuss it, we can make sure that, you know, the final result, especially with first-time filmmakers for us, that the final result is so good that we can put it on the channel, and then we sign an agreement whereby there is most of the time a due date, etc., a deadline for you to hand in your piece, which in many cases can be a rough cut. So I'm saying this because I just want to stress that it's not that we expect you to go come back with that piece, and if we don't like it, that's it. But we work very much with you to ensure that it's of the right quality, and we do have a budget that we give you. Whatever financial agreement we have, however much money, we usually pay you 50% up front and the remaining upon delivery. So you go off there with some money, and then again we give you the remaining once you deliver us the piece. Yes.
So you only cut that is made for Clarity TV, and then there was a few small changes, even one small change, and so there was some different cuts. What would that mean?
That's something that, again, I guess would be brought to the attention of the Business Affairs Department, and they, with you, will be able to work out what, you know, if those changes are big enough for it to look like a completely different documentary, or not completely different documentary, but I'm saying like a different piece from the one that we're showing, or if it wouldn't. The idea is the same with pretty much most other channels, where if you produce a TV show or, you know, a news show or, you know, a news segment or whatever it is, you just don't really want that to be seen on your channel and then to be seen somewhere else, the exact same thing, a couple of days later. So, you know, usually the idea is that you can make changes, you can cut it in a different way. It's never happened so far that, you know, people go like, right, I'll make this, and then I'll just literally change two frames and then go and try to sell it to someone else. Because in most other cases, also other channels wouldn't really want to have something that's already, that's so similar to something that's on our channel, so to speak. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, not really part of the... It's pretty much repurposing it, remaking it from scratch in a way. Not as much as the shooting part of it, but the editing part of it, which is really what then tells the narrative of the piece.
If it's news, why would channels not want to broadcast the same thing? I mean,
like the Metro and the London Light and the London Paper are all the same thing, like identically. So you say kind of like channels wouldn't want to do that.
What do you mean? Well, I'm sure that the, you know, even about...
Yeah, I mean... They,
since you mentioned those Lindsay Lohan coming out of rehab, the articles would read differently. It's the exact same issue, but if you read it, it wouldn't be the same writer for the three, would it?
In some cases, it is, actually. Yeah, often the same photographs. And it's kind of... I'm just intrigued. I'm not, you know, I'm just because it's kind of like...
I think, since we don't really tell news ourselves, but we either commission documentary, newsy pieces from producers out there, either they're working for on a piece... on Lindsay Lohan for... why do I have to pick that example? Because you mentioned the London Light, the Metro. Something else.
I'll help you. I think, I mean, we funded a film that's a feature-length film about wounded American Iraq vets coming back and arms and legs blown off. And it's a young filmmaker. It's his first feature-length film. It's really cracking, actually. He's making a feature-length version that we're helping him to fund. And then he turned around while he was in the edit, sold this guy's 7-minute cut down of it. A nice bit of short chain, you know, a couple of grand straight in his pocket, really, really helped him when he was in the edit. So I think when you've got substantially different lengths, there's just no confusion because you can only, you know, I mean, it, you know, it's just completely different. I think it gets harder when it's like a 5-minute version for these people and a 9-minute version for them, because then inevitably it's sort of, yeah. If you're, you know, up to 6 minutes or 10 minutes.
Yeah, maybe, correct. Yeah, up to 10 minutes.
Half an hour. It's going to be so different.
And most of the time,
you know, you can't structure something.
Yeah, and most of the time it tends to be that when there is a reversioning to do, it's from a longer documentary, a feature documentary, say, to, you know, a 5-minute cut. But again, to answer your question, since we ask and we appeal to the people out there to make these news pieces, unless it's, we don't have a problem with it, but it's, you know, unless someone can make a piece, say, on the Israeli-Lebanese conflict, for us, unless the BBC 2 days later asks them to make it, then that would be kind of the same perspective. And of course, there'd be an issue there, i.e., please don't make the same one. But it's very rare that with all the people out there, the people that we use, that's why we call it viewer-created content, and that's why it's 18 to 34, and that's why our target is not the 50-year-old, slightly over-eating newsreader kind of guy that tends to, you know, conduct all of... Do you see what I'm saying? The kind of more old-school news... shows that don't really seem that they do have the problem of attracting a younger audience, a younger crowd, because they seem to be so detached. Say again, you know, the BBC would show a couple of pictures of Condoleezza Rice uselessly shaking hands in some, you know, in Palestine. We commission someone to go to Palestine and make a piece for us. So of course, the issue can be the same, but what we look for is a different approach, and it's, you know, a very personal approach of the person that's there living the experience. Any more questions?
So,
I've got two separate questions, but
sing out, Louise. Let's hear them.
One is just from the cinema stream. A couple of things that you mentioned tonight. I've just started for the first time to look to get my films. Any of the main films and stuff just been set up. I'm now looking sort of move up in terms of production, so I still really short film format. And it just seems like it's the same names that keep cropping up for short film runs, and it seems like
hardly any.
A couple of mangy bones for blouse and hungry dogs kind of thing.
You live in London?
I do.
Yeah, disaster. We're going to move to
Liverpool.
Yeah. And then the second question is kind of
better than most of them, maybe.
Scotland. Any more names?
All in the book, baby.
Yeah.
The second thing, I suppose, is just something that it seems like short film funding isn't connected to kind of maybe business and arts patronage generally, in the way that theatre is, and the way that, you know, often other art forms seem to have a much better kind of cozy relationship with people who can afford to splurge for the cash for prestige. You know, high kilos, so we've got our logo on this, you know, nice art product, be it an opera, a play, or whatever. And short films just,
I think that is happening more and more, and it certainly happens for short films more than it does for feature films or even for docs, I think, where you basically you have more people sort of cluing in, more corporations cluing into the fact that there's an audience for short films and that this audience is using the web and they're sort of getting short films in a different way in the last sort of 7 or 8 years. You guys worked with Warp. Who else have you worked with? Other corporate partners? Also Sony, didn't you? Haven't you on BBC?
It's slightly difficult because the whole BBC side of things is you can't be seen to be marketing one company over another. So, you know, if we work with Shooting People, as we do, we also need to work with Karen and Four Docs and everyone else, which we do because that's the whole point of what we're doing. In terms of commercial businesses, it's a little bit more difficult because if it's a platform, if it's a PSP, then yeah, sure, we should have stuff on it because it's a platform, but...
Also, aside from BBC, I think also Sony just did something with the Manchester Festival where they commissioned a group of filmmakers to make filmmakers and composers and different artists to work together to collaborate to make pieces. You guys, when you were at the hospital, worked with Audi and who else did the Smirnoff? So it is happening more and more.
Yeah, the film competitions that are now everywhere are usually or very often brand driven. That's probably not quite what you mean. We put some money up, we're a brand, and it's going to go on it. Now you've got to make a film that fits our scheme. What do you mean is, I want to make the film I want to make, and who can I take it to?
How do you chase literally angel investment then? Without giving away any angels?
Without giving away any
angels. What's the approach? Do they fall out of the sky? Or?
Yeah, the approach is literally just asking. I mean, we have... In the past, we've been funded. You know, it's kind of a lot of the funding for the film I showed you came because one of our producers is an ex choreographer who's had a very long career. She did the choreography in Roger Rabbit, Sing Detective, and Shakespeare in Love, and all sorts of things. So she knows a lot of people, mates with a lot of people, a lot of very rich people. So when she wanted to make the film, she said, "Look, I've got this great script," and they read it and went, "Yeah, okay, here's a little bit of money." And kind of, you know, you get kind of seven people giving you, in their terms, a little bit of money, and you've got a short film budget. With other things, I mean, we did a short film. You know the 48-hour film challenge? It's now come down to the 24-hour film challenge in the way that everything is shrinking. Budgets are getting smaller, time frames are getting smaller. We did the...
The one-hour film challenge.
Yeah, the one-hour film challenge, yeah. It's all run by Boots, that one. we did the 48-hour film challenge in Paris because we were also trying to show off, and we had no idea how we'd get to Paris. So literally my mate Alex wrote a letter to a very famous and very successful filmmaker and said, "We're doing a thing in Paris, can we have some money?" And he said, "Yeah, why not?" gave us the money to get to Paris, which was really, really nice of him. We sent him a copy of the film. He said, "Please don't ever contact me again." So, I don't think it was from seeing the film, though. I think that was just a general kind of like, don't tell anyone I did that, but, you know, off you go kind of way. But, yeah, I mean, I think the point I'd really like to make, actually, coming back to your original question, is that I think the real problem you're looking at, and it's shown by the fact that, the things that are sparking up are kind of product-driven and brand-driven, is that there's no real through line commercially. Like with the theatre, you can see, well, look, there's the really commercial, successful theatre exists. And you go, if you want to make a lot of money, you can do that. And so if you're trying to get credit to do that, artistic credit to kind of, you know, get good reviews or whatever, just show that you're not just some awful financial whore, then, put some money into a small play at the Donmar or something. If you're trying to look for, new commercial people, new people to make TV adverts, then, the whole kind of, that's where the branding thing comes in. But the film industry, the actual theatrical film industry in this country, is kind of like a hobbyist industry. And so, no, those people don't really have money to put into the grassroots, to fund you to make your short film, to say, if I encourage this person to follow their amazing idea, then that will then turn into an amazing feature film that will make a load of people a lot of money. Because 99 times out of 100, that just doesn't happen. So that really is the sort of real problem we're facing. It's not so much a problem with short films, it's a problem with the wider picture of kind of being this sort of weird satellite of America trying to sort of trying to be Hollywood on not even, you know, not even a shoestring.
Can I add
something?
I think, I mean, there are ways you can wangle it. You know, post-production houses are generally quite generous, and if they've got a junior editor who wants to get more of film experience, maybe they've done some ads, maybe they've worked on music videos, but they haven't done film. It's a good development of their own talent. And if they've got time, they've got all the kit, you know, they'll have sound designers, they'll have, you know, special effects machine, everything that would normally cost you the most out of your budget. If you can get that kind of thing in kind, then yeah, they'll go for the credit. I think it is possible. You just, it's not so much Michael Caine presents my film, you know, it's not going to be that, because how does he know your film's going to be good? it's more, if you can sell it in as a way of it helping another company in terms of them developing their own talent, I think that can work quite well. Same with music libraries or record labels or, you know, anyone, if you've got this amazing track and it's not Radiohead, but it's a, you know, it's an up-and-coming band, they might be quite happy for you to use the music in the film if it's done in an intelligent way, because it'll help to get them more exposure in a different way.
Trish, you pretty much covered all of the funds around Britain when editing and compiling the book. And, you know, it's not that hard to find them. You know, Google them, and then you've got a page of Google links. But is there any way of double-guessing them? In terms of what do they actually want rather than what they say they want?
The one thing that kept coming up, I don't know if, I hope this answers your question, but the thing that kept coming up over and over again when we talked to funders was that they all said that before they fund anyone, they want to see initiative and also see proof that a filmmaker can take a budget and start a project and finish a project and deliver a project. So basically they all said, maybe this is, you were just saying you feel like the same names get funded over and over again. It could be at its core sort of driven by this sense that you're spending money and you want to make sure that the filmmaker can deliver something good. Because that's what they kept saying. They kept saying, we want to see filmmakers like the Blaines who go out and make a no-budget film, or like literally a no-budget film. I think you guys made one for £50. You know, and it doesn't have to, the production values don't have to be perfect. What they're looking for is that you have an idea, that you can budget it, that you can shoot it, that you can edit it, and that you can sort of deliver something. So I think the key thing, if you're going to second guess them, make as much as you can. And also they kept saying, no, which works are your good works. So if you make five films and you send in your reel, don't necessarily send in everything you've made. Send in your best two that you want to sort of, that you want to represent you as a filmmaker. Those were the sort of two things that came up over and over again.
Can I make a very quick comment?
Yeah.
Dimmi. No, I just wanted to say something, picking up on pretty much what all of you said, and maybe a frustration that's coming out from your question, which I can be very sympathetic to. But I think, A, I hope that, you know, with what we're doing, that we are, after all, a TV network about short film. And yes, it's documentary, and we don't do any fiction. But, you know, there's a whole channel entering 52 million homes dedicated to the short form. And I think there's, you know, I was wondering, could there be, whilst you were asking the question you guys were answering, if we could do the same, if we could have a channel as big as this, with the people that we have involved in this channel, about short fiction. And I think that couldn't, right now, mainly, I guess, one, because documentary doesn't allow Hollywood to survive, as you were saying. There is much less to lose with short factual form than, you know, in comparison than there is with fiction. And also maybe a second point is that I see, probably because I think we all see, and maybe most filmmakers do also see, making a short just as the step into. Yeah. And you all filmmakers, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I don't consider myself a TV producer, yes, but filmmaker per se, I don't know as much. You also consider it the first step to then eventually make the feature. And I have loads of filmmakers, friends, and my best friend owns a film production company. You know, she had to make the first the short film that she tried to take to the few festivals, and then the a cinema in London gave her a screening. People came, and it was the whole thing was purely done not so much for passion for making short films, but really to then eventually get enough exposure to get money for feature films. And therefore, you know, it's a poor short film kind of gets, you know, all of these very talented people. It's like my country, a lot of talented people, but then they'll leave. And kind of, you know, then you get a new batch all the time. But, you know, it just doesn't give you enough back. And in most cases, just the means to survive on a day-to-day basis financially, then it's very hard. So it's kind of, you know, what's the expression? The cat biting the tail. No, my point, I'm really not
sorry,
even...
That was my point.
your point's that
okay, then everyone
like
should.
Really.
Yeah, everyone should.
In a funny way, I've made some documentaries, but obviously I make quite a lot of fiction films. I'd agree with that, because I think I'd completely agree with everything you'd say, and I'd say that it's true that you couldn't have... The big difference is the fact that documentaries are based on real life, so there's always someone that's actually interested in that. And most of the short films that I see... Why would anyone want to watch them? You know, they are made by a person who's gone, yeah, I'm a genius, I'm going to make a film about a struggling artist who struggles a bit and then probably has a very attractive girlfriend. Ugh. And, you know, it's not interesting for anyone except the filmmaker. And the other point I was going to make, and I was going to try and make it very quickly, I've forgotten. So,
gentlemen, they're in what I think is a Michael Franti T-shirt.
Yes. I just wanted to find out, has any of the panel had any experience with product placement within a short film?
I did, prior to the BBC, I worked for a production company, same production company that Anastasia used to work for called Stink, and they did a scheme with Absolute Vodka, and they made a Bollywood short film off the back of an Absolute Vodka ad, which was... It was great and it was not great. There were two things. It was a brilliant film. It was a Bollywood film. It had absolutely amazing, like, feature film production values. Very funny. Had very famous Indian actors in it. Scripted beautifully. But it had absolute bottle shapes in the film all over. And it was very like, haha, look, there's another one. It wasn't like subliminal messaging or anything. But the problem with that was, you know, you're not really going to get that on TV. There's a lot of festivals who'd be like, I'm not showing this, this is an ad, even though it's a very good film. So for me, I sort of came in on the end in terms of the distribution, trying to get it out there. It was very hard because, as a film, it was brilliant. But you wouldn't get a knowing festival to ever give that a prize, or they might begrudgingly show it, but they'd be like, is it an ad, is it a film, I don't know. Interestingly, Canal Plus in France bought it, who are normally very discerning about what they show. So they saw that the story was worth more than the branding issue. And there was another thing. When I worked at Atom Films, we ran a series of competitions with Ford, the car. That was an American production scheme, and the whole point, a bit like the BMW films that they did a while ago, was it had to have the car in it. But that for me was a bit grim because I just felt like car ads with a bit of a story around them.
Brands are getting much smarter than that though.
Yeah,
we have lots of music.
It's better now.
We did a set of films with Stella Artois quite recently, and you know they're pretty smarter than that. They don't want to be involved in the documentary. You know, they want it's a bit classy because they're being associated with creativity and certain obviously limits. Where you can go when you're working with brands because they want reasonably fluffy subjects. But
you look at their ads, and their ads are like little films anyway.
Yeah. It's a great experience.
It's the same director actually who did the Stella ads.
Really good money, and they're really easy to deal with. And they just wanted their logo on the front end of the film.
So that's nice. Their only experience, sorry.
But it comes back to the same thing. What brands want is to own competitions and schemes and things they can label properly. I don't think you can go to these people with a one-on-one and go, I've got this one film I'm working on, how about it? You can put your logo on it, I can make it. Because they're not set up, you know, to deal with things as micro as that. You know, their marketing department's looking to spend, you know, 100 grand on a film competition opportunity that they can explain to their bosses. They can't really deal with, you know, individual things.
Do they own the films then?
No.
They don't. They just own the right to use them.
We did a really nice deal
whereby they paid for the films. The films were shown on Channel 4 in the 3-minute wonder spots, and then everybody had the non-exclusive distribution rights, both Studio Artois and the filmmakers. So Artois have been showing it at all sorts of festivals, that things that they sponsor, which is great for the filmmakers, and the filmmakers can put them anywhere they like as well. They're going on YouTube at the moment, so it's kind of free-for-all, which is better, I think, because it means that the chance that the film travels is much greater if everybody's got the right to distribute it, rather than being, you know, the filmmakers have the approval of the brand, or, I mean, the brand have, but they're not going to do it, or somebody just said everyone can do it.
That's really good.
This is a podcast from Shooting People.